fall into big savings, all in the Kroger app.
Get packs of juicy red, green, black, or tri-color variety seedless grapes for $3.99 each. Then get tender boneless chuck roast or steaks for $4.99 a pound, all with your card and a digital coupon. Shop these deals at your local Kroger today, or tap the screen now to download the Kroger app to save big today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Prices and product availability subject to change. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Chapter 10 of 2 Years in the Forbidden City. This LibriVox recording is in the public domain. Recording by J.C. Guan. 2 Years in the Forbidden City by Princess De Ling. Chapter 10. The Young Empress. I thought of so many things while I was riding in my chair. It was a glorious day. I felt sorry for Her Majesty, for she was very quiet that day. Generally she was happy, and made everyone laugh with her. I thought about the branches of willow, too, but could not understand the meaning. I came out of the hall while Her Majesty was dining with the Emperor, and found the young Empress sitting in a small room on the left side of the courtyard, with several court ladies. When they saw me, they made signs for me to go there. I found them all drinking tea, and the young Empress said to me, "I am sure you must be tired and hungry. Come and sit near me and have a cup of tea." I thanked her and sat down beside her, and we talked of what we saw on the road and how we had enjoyed our long ride. She said, "We have still an hour's ride before we reach the Forbidden City." She also talked about the ceremony we had performed that morning, and said that we must all pray earnestly for rain. I could not wait any longer, so I asked her what those branches of willow meant. She smiled and told me that willow could bring water, as the Buddhist religion believes, and that it was an old custom of the court wearing willow leaves when praying for rain. She also told me that we must perform the same ceremony every morning until the rain came. We heard Her Majesty talking in the courtyard, and knew that she had finished her luncheon, so we went in with the young Empress, and ate what was left, as usual. I found the food very nice indeed, although it seemed rather funny without having meat. We came out into the courtyard, and saw that Her Majesty was walking up and down. She said to us, "My legs are so stiff, riding in the chair. I must walk a little before we leave here. Are you all tired?" We told her that we were not tired, so she ordered us to walk with her. It looked very funny to see us walking round and round, Her Majesty in front, and we following her. Her Majesty turned and smiled at us, and said, "We are just like horses taking their rounds at a stable." It reminded me of a circus. Li Lian Ying came and knelt down, and said that it was time for Her Majesty to depart, in order to reach the Forbidden City at the lucky hour she had selected, so we left Wan Shou Si. All the chairs went very fast, and after an hour's ride, we came near the palace gate. We followed the Emperor's chair, taking a shorter route, and noticed the gate was wide open. His Majesty, the Emperor, and the young Empress chairs went in, but we had to alight and walk in. There were small chairs waiting for us. As I explained before, these little chairs were carried by eunuchs, with a rope across their shoulders. We came to the courtyard of the audience hall, where the Emperor and the Empress were waiting for us. As usual, His Majesty knelt in front. Behind him was the young Empress, and we knelt in a row behind her, waiting to welcome Her Majesty to her palace. She went to her room where the eunuchs had placed everything in order long before her arrival. We held the ceremony that afternoon and evening. After Her Majesty had retired, we came back to our rooms and found that everything was in order. Our eunuchs had made up our beds already. It was very nice to have them, for we could not do our own work at all. I was so tired, and my limbs were stiff. I immediately went to sleep, and did not realize how long I had slept until I heard someone knocking at my window. I got up and pulled the blind away. I noticed that the sky looked dull and thought it was clouded. I felt happy, and thought it might rain, and so relieve Her Majesty. I got dressed in great haste, but to my disappointment I saw the sunshine on the opposite windows. The palace in the Forbidden City was so old, and built in such a queer way. The courtyards were small, and the verandas very broad. All the rooms were dark. No electric light. We had to use candlelight. One could not see the sky except by going into the courtyard and looking up. I found that I had risen before the sun was up, and I was not quite awake yet, and thought the sky was clouded. I went to Her Majesty's own palace and found the young Empress already there. She was always the first, and always looked so tidy, I often wondered how early she had to get up. She told me that I was not late, although Her Majesty was awake, but not up yet. I went into her bedroom and made my usual morning courtesy to her. The first thing she asked me was about the weather. I had to tell her the truth, that there was no sign of rain. Her Majesty got up, dressed, and had her breakfast as usual, and told us there would be no audience that morning. The Emperor went to the temple, sacrificing, and there was nothing important to attend to. We prayed for 3 days in succession, but no rain came. I found that Her Majesty was truly discouraged, and ordered each of us to pray 20 times a day. We marked a spot with vermilion powder and a little water on big yellow sheets of paper each time we prayed. On the 6th day of the 4th month, the sky was clouded. I ran to Her Majesty's bedroom that morning to tell her the news, but found that someone had told her already. She smiled and said to me, "You are not the first one to give me the good news. I know every one of you wanted to be the first to tell me. I feel very tired today, and wish to lie down a little longer. You can go, and I will send for you when I am ready to get up." When I went to search for the young Empress, I found all the court ladies there also. They all asked me if I had noticed the rain. We came out of the waiting room and found that the courtyard was wet, and after a while it rained very fast. Her Majesty got up, and we prayed as usual. Fortunately, the rain did not stop, but came pouring down all that day. Her Majesty played solitaire with the dominoes, and I stood at the back of her chair watching her. I saw that the young Empress and all the girls were standing on the veranda. Her Majesty saw them too, and said to me, "Go and tell them to wait in the waiting room. Can't they see that the veranda is wet?" I went to them, but before I had the opportunity of telling them anything, the young Empress told me that the waiting room was wet, and that the water had gone in. As I said before, the building was very old, and there were no drains at all. Her Majesty's own palace was high. It had 12 steps, while our waiting room, which was on the left side of her palace, was built right on the ground, with no raised foundation at all. While I was talking on the veranda just for a few minutes, I got quite wet. Her Majesty knocked at her glass window and told us to go in. Now I must explain that none of us, not even the young Empress, could enter Her Majesty's palace without her orders, except we had work to do there, or were on duty. Her Majesty was very happy that day. She laughed and said that we looked as if we had just been pulled out of the lake. The young Empress had on a pale blue gown, and the red tassel on her headdress was dripping red water all over her gown. She smiled and said to us, "Look at those girls. Their gowns are all spoiled." While we were talking, Her Majesty gave us orders for us to change our clothes. After they had gone, I went back to Her Majesty. She looked at me and said, "You are wet also, only your clothes do not show." I had on a cashmere dress, which was made very plain. She touched my arm and said, "How wet you are! You had better change and put on a thick dress. I think foreign clothes must be very uncomfortable. The waist is too small, and it seems to me out of proportion to the rest of the body. I am sure that you will look much prettier in our Manchu gown. I want you to change and put your Parisian clothes away as souvenirs. I only wanted to know how foreign ladies dressed, and now I have seen enough. The Dragon Boat Festival will be here next month, and I will make some pretty gowns for you." I thanked her by kowtowing to the ground and told her that I would be only too pleased to change into Manchu clothes, but having lived so many years abroad, and having always worn foreign clothes, I had not had any made. We were planning to change into Manchu gowns before coming to the court, but we had received orders that Lao Zuzong wished to see us in foreign clothes. I was very glad when I received that order, as there were several reasons why I wanted to wear Manchu gowns. First, the court ladies at the beginning treated us as outsiders. Secondly, I knew that Her Majesty did not like them, and besides, we were very uncomfortable living at the palace in Beijing, and made up our minds that we must wear Manchu clothes, which were made for it. We had so much work to do, and having to stand most of the time, one absolutely needed loose garments. Her Majesty ordered one of the eunuchs to bring one of her dresses for me to try on, so I went back to my own room and took off my wet clothes and changed. I tried on her gown, but it was too loose for me. The length was quite all right, and so were the sleeves. Her Majesty told one of the eunuch writers to write down my measurements in order to have a gown made for me, and said she was sure it would fit me. She did the same thing for my mother and sister, and ordered our gowns to be made at once. I knew she was pleased, as she told me what color would suit me the best. She said that I should always wear pink and pale blue, for they suited, and were her favorite colors too. She also talked about our headdress, and ordered some made the same as worn by the other court ladies. She said to me, "I know you can wear my shoes, for I tried yours on the first day you came. Don't you remember? I must select a lucky day for you to become a Manchu once more." She said this with a smile, and no more foreign clothes after that. She took her special book for lucky days and hours, and studied it a little while. Then she said the 18th of that month was the best. Li Lianying, the head eunuch, knew how to please Her Majesty, and said he would give orders to have everything ready for us at that time. Her Majesty told us the way we must have our hair dressed, and what kind of flowers we should wear. In fact, she was very happy arranging to make us into Manchus. A short while after, she dismissed us for the day. It rained for 3 days without stopping. The last day the Emperor came back, and all ceremonies ceased. Her Majesty never liked to stay in the Forbidden City, and I was not a bit surprised, as I hated the place. We had to use candles to dress by, in the morning, as the rooms were in absolute darkness, even in the middle of the afternoon. It rained so much that finally Her Majesty said she would return to the Summer Palace the next day, whether it was raining or not, and we were all very glad to go. We returned to the Summer Palace on the 7th. It was a dull day, but no rain. We packed everything in just the same way we had done when we came, and stopped at Wanshousi, and had our luncheon. That day we commenced to eat meat again. I noticed that Her Majesty enjoyed her meal very much. She asked me if I liked the food without meat, and I told her that everything was nicely done, and that I enjoyed the food very much, although without meat. She told me that she could not eat that kind of food and enjoy it, and that if it were not necessary to make sacrifice, she would have not abstained. The first garden party of the year was given by the Empress Dowager to the ladies of the diplomatic corps in the fourth moon. This year, Her Majesty desired to deviate a little from previous custom, and issued orders that stalls should be arranged in the garden, on a similar principle to a bazaar, on which were to be displayed curios, embroidered work, flowers, etc., etc. These were to be given as presents to the guests. The guests were Mrs. Conger, wife of the American minister, Mrs. Williams, wife of Chinese secretary of the American legation, Madame and Mademoiselle de Carcer, wife and daughter of the Spanish minister, Madame Uchida, wife of the Japanese minister, and a few ladies of the Japanese legation, Madame Almeida, wife of the Portuguese chargé d'affaires, Madame Khan, wife of the secretary of the French legation, the wives of several French officers, Lady Susan Townley, wife of the first secretary of the British legation, two ladies from the German legation, wives of German officers, and wives of a few customs officials. On this occasion, Her Majesty selected a most beautiful gown of peacock blue, embroidered all over with phoenix. The embroidery was raised, and each phoenix had a string of pearls 2 inches long sewed into its mouth. Whenever Her Majesty stirred, these strings of tiny pearls moved forwards and backwards, and it made a very pretty effect. Of course, she wore her jade phoenix on her hair, as usual, and shoes, and handkerchief embroidered with the same pattern. My mother wore a lavender silk gown, trimmed with silver braid. Her hat was of the same shade, with plumes to match. My sister and myself wore pale blue Chinese silk gowns with insertion and medallions of Irish crochet, and trimmed with tiny velvet bands. We wore blue hats with large pink roses. All the court ladies dressed in their most picturesque gowns, and it was a very pretty sight to see the procession walking to the audience hall. Her Majesty was in her happiest mood that morning, and said to us, "I wonder how I would look in foreign clothes. My waist is very small, but wearing this kind of loose gown it would not show. I don't think I would need to squeeze myself so tight either, but I don't think there is anything in the world prettier than our Manchu gowns." First, the guests were received in audience by their Majesties. They were accompanied by the doyen, Baron Chican, minister for Austria, and an interpreter from each legation. On entering the audience hall, all the guests stood in line, and the doyen presented a short address to their Majesties. This was translated to Prince Qing, who in turn communicated it to the Emperor. The Emperor made a suitable reply in Chinese, which was translated by the doyen's interpreter. Then the doyen mounted the steps of the dais and shook hands with their Majesties, the rest of the guests being presented in turn. I was standing at the right hand of the Empress Dowager, and as each guest came forward, called out their names and the legation which they represented. Her Majesty had a few words with everyone, and when she saw a new face, she would ask how long they had been in China, whether they liked it, etc., etc. All these conversations I interpreted for Her Majesty. As the guests finished paying their respects, they passed along and remained standing in the hall until everybody had been presented. The interpreters, who did not take part in this ceremony, but had remained standing in the hall until it was over, were then conducted by Prince Qing to another part of the palace, where refreshments were provided for them. After they had gone out, their Majesties descended from the dais and mixed with the guests. The formal ceremony now being concluded, chairs were brought in, and everybody made themselves comfortable. Tea was brought in by the eunuchs, and after a few minutes' conversation, we all adjourned to the refreshment room, with the exception of the Empress Dowager, the Emperor, the young Empress, and the secondary wife. In the absence of Her Majesty, the Imperial Princess, the Princess Dowager's adopted daughter, officiated as hostess, Mrs. Conger sitting at her right, and Madame de Carcer, wife of the Spanish minister, on her left. The food was all Chinese, but knives and forks were provided for the use of the guests. During the luncheon, the Imperial Princess stood up and spoke a few words of welcome, which I translated into English and French. After the luncheon was over, we adjourned to the garden, where their Majesties were awaiting us. A brass band was playing European airs. Her Majesty led the way around the gardens, passing the various stalls on the way, where the ladies would stop and admire the different articles, which were later presented to them as souvenirs of the occasion. On arriving at a tea-house which had been erected in the gardens, everybody rested and partook of tea. Their majesties then wished everybody good-bye, and the guests were then conducted to their chairs and took their departure. As usual, we reported to Her Majesty everything that had taken place and how the guests had enjoyed themselves. She said, "How is it that these foreign ladies have such large feet? Their shoes are like boats, and the funny way they walk I cannot say I admire. I haven't yet seen one foreigner with pretty hands. Although they have white skins, their faces are covered with white hair. Do you think they are beautiful?" I replied that I had seen some American beauties when I was abroad. Her Majesty said, "No matter how beautiful they are, they have ugly eyes. I can't bear that blue color. They remind me of a cat." After a few more remarks, she ordered us to retire, saying that we must be tired. We were rather used up and glad of an opportunity to rest, so made our curtsies and retired. We had been at the palace more than 2 months, and I had had no opportunity to see my father at all, who was quite ill at that time. We did not know whether we could ask leave of absence from the court. I received letters from my father every day, telling me to have courage and to do my duty. My mother asked the young empress if it would be correct to ask Her Majesty for permission to go home for a day or two. The young empress told us that it would be quite all right to do that, but she thought it would be better if we could wait until after the 8th, for there would be a feast on that day. The 8th day of the 4th moon every year is the ceremony of eating green peas. According to the Buddhist religion, there is a hereafter which divides or grades according to the life that is lived on earth. That is to say, those who live good lives go to heaven when they die, and those who are bad go to a bad place to suffer. On this occasion, Her Majesty sent to the people she liked each a plate containing 8 peas, and we had to eat them. The young empress told me that if I presented a plate of peas to Her Majesty, it would please her, which I did. This meant, "May we meet in the hereafter, 吃元豆." Her Majesty was very happy that day. We went to the west side of the lake and had our luncheon there. Her Majesty talked to us about the first day we came to the court, and then sent to my mother, "I wonder if Yu Geng is any better. When will he be able to come to the court? I haven't seen him since he returned from France." My father had asked 3 months' leave of absence from the court on account of his poor health. My mother answered and said that he was feeling better, but that his legs were still very weak, and he could not walk much. Her Majesty then said to us, "Oh, I have forgotten to tell you that if you wish to go home, you can ask permission. I have been so busy lately and forgot to remind you." We thanked her and told her that we would like to go home and see how my father was, so she gave orders that we should leave the court the next day. Then she asked me how long I would like to stay at home, and of course I knew the custom, and told her that I was waiting for her orders. Would 2 or 3 days be enough? We told her that it suited us beautifully. I was so surprised when she mentioned it to us, and wondered if anyone had told her of our intentions, or if Her Majesty was a mind-reader. When she retired that afternoon, I went to see the young empress, who was always very nice and kind, and asked me to sit near her. Her eunuch brought me a cup of tea. Her rooms were furnished exactly the same as Her Majesty's, but everything looked extremely dainty, and showed a very good taste. We talked about the life of the palace for a long time, and she told me that she was very fond of us, and so was Her Majesty. I told her that Her Majesty had mentioned to us about going home for 2 or 3 days, and that I was surprised to see how thoughtful she was. She said that someone had reminded Her Majesty to let us go home, for we had been at the court for more than 2 months. I found out afterwards that it was the head eunuch Li, who had heard that we were anxious to go. The young empress said to me, "I want to teach you to be wise. That is, you are ordered to leave the court tomorrow." But Her Majesty did not mention any particular hour. you must not talk about it to anyone. And don't show that you are excited to go home. Don't dress as if you are going out tomorrow, but be natural and do your work as if you don't care about going at all. Don't you remind her, in case she forgets to tell you to go, and come back on the second day, which is the custom. It will show that you are anxious to see Her Majesty, so you come back one day earlier than the appointed time. I was so happy to get this information, and asked her if it would be all right to bring Her Majesty some presents when we returned to the court. She said that was just the proper thing to do. The next day we did the same work, and went to the audience hall with Her Majesty as usual. After the audience was over, Her Majesty ordered her luncheon to be served at the country tea house. This tea house was built in country style, and right on top of her puny mountain, with bamboo and straw, and all the furniture was made of bamboo also. They were beautifully made, and all the frames of the windows were carved into a line of characters, show, long life, and butterflies, with pink silk curtain hangings. At the rear of this exquisite little building was a bamboo shade, with railings all around, hung with red silk lanterns. The seats were built against the railings, so that one could sit on them comfortably. This was supposed to be used by the court ladies as their waiting room. We played dice with Her Majesty when luncheon was over. We played a very long time, and I won the game that day. Her Majesty laughed and said to me, "You have luck today. I think you are so happy to go home that your fairies have helped you to win the game." As I mentioned before, this game was called Eight Fairies Going Across the Sea. "I think it is time for you to go now." While seeing this, she turned and asked one of the eunuchs what the time was, and he answered that it was 2:30. We kowtowed to Her Majesty, and stood waiting for more orders. Then she said, "I am sorry to see you go, although I know you are coming back within 2 or 3 days. I know I shall miss you." To my mother she said, "Tell Yu Gong to take care of his health and get well soon. I have ordered 4 eunuchs to accompany you, and am sending some of my own rice for him." We had to kowtow again in thanking Her Majesty for her kindness, and finally she said, "Nimenzouba, you can go now." We withdrew, and found the young empress on the veranda. We curtsied to her, and said goodbye to the court ladies, and came to our rooms to get ready to start. Our eunuchs were very good, and had everything packed up ready for us. We gave 10 taels to each of our eunuchs, for that was the custom, and gave 4 taels to each chair-bearer of the palace. When we arrived at the palace gate, our own chairs were waiting for us. We said goodbye to our eunuchs. Strange to say, they seemed attached to us, and told us to come back soon. The 4 eunuchs, ordered by Her Majesty to see us home, were there, and as soon as we got into our chairs, I saw them riding on horseback beside us. It seemed to me just like a dream, the 2 months I had spent at the court, and I must say I felt very sorry to leave Her Majesty, but at the same time I wanted very much to see my father. We got home after a 2 hours' ride, and found him looking much better, and one can imagine how happy he was to see us. The 4 eunuchs came into our parlor, and placed the yellow bag of rice on the table. My father thanked Her Majesty by kowtowing to the ground. We gave these eunuchs each a little present, and they departed. I told my father about my life at the palace, and how very kind Her Majesty was to me. He asked me if I could influence Her Majesty to reform some day, and hoped he would live to see it. Somehow or other, I had the idea that I could, and promised him that I would try my best. Her Majesty sent 2 eunuchs to see us the next morning, and also sent us food and fruits. They told us that Her Majesty missed us, and had told them to ask if we missed her. We told these eunuchs that we were returning to the court the next day. We stayed at home only 2 days, and a great many people came to see us, and kept us busy all the time. My father suggested that we should start from the house at about 3 a.m., so as to get to the Summer Palace before Her Majesty was up. We left our house at 3 a.m. in total darkness, just like we had 2 months before. What a change! I thought I was the happiest girl in the world. I was told by many people, especially by the young Empress, that Her Majesty was extremely fond of me. I had also heard that she did not care for young people at all. Although I was happy, I noticed that some of the court ladies did not like me, and they made me uncomfortable on many occasions by not telling me just the way Her Majesty wanted the work to be done. They smiled at each other whenever Her Majesty was saying to my mother that she liked me, and that I was always careful in doing anything that pleased her. I knew I was going to see those people again. However, I made up my mind to fight my battles alone. I only wished to be useful to Her Majesty, and would not take any notice of them. It was a little after 5 o'clock when we reached the Summer Palace. Our own eunuchs were very happy to see us again, and told us that Her Majesty was not up yet, and that we had time to go to our rooms, where they had some breakfast prepared for us. We went to see the young Empress first, and found she was ready to go to Her Majesty's palace. She was also very glad to see us, and told us that our Manchu costumes were all ready, and that she had seen them, and they were perfectly lovely. We were very hungry, and enjoyed our breakfast immensely. After that, we went to see Her Majesty. She was awake, so we went into her bedroom. We greeted her the same way that we did every morning, and kowtowed to her, and thanked her for all the things she had sent us while we were at home. She sat up on the bed, smiled, and said, "Are you glad to come back? I know everyone who comes to me and stays for a while does not like to go away from here any more. I am glad to see you." To my mother, "How is Yu Gong?" My mother told her that my father was much better. She asked us what we did for those 2 days, staying at home. She also wanted to know whether we still remembered which day she had chosen for us to change into our Manchu costume. We told her we knew the date, and were looking forward to it. The eunuchs brought in 3 large yellow trays, full of beautiful gowns, shoes, white silk socks, handkerchiefs, bags for nuts, in fact, the whole set, including the gongzan, Manchu headdress. We kowtowed to her, and told her we were very much pleased with everything she had given us. Her Majesty told the eunuchs to bring everything out for us to see. She said to us, "You see, I give you 1 full official dress, 1 set of chao zhu, amber beads, 2 embroidered gowns, 4 ordinary gowns for everyday wear, and 2 gowns for chi chen wear. The anniversary of the death of an emperor or empress. 1 sky blue, the other mauve, with very little trimming. I also have a lot of underwear for you." I was excited, and told Her Majesty that I would like to commence to dress up at once. She smiled, and said, "You must wait until the day comes, the lucky day I have selected for you. You must try to fix your hair first, which is the most difficult thing to do. Ask the young Empress to teach you." Although she told me to wait, I knew she was pleased to see that I showed so much enthusiasm. She asked me the first day when we came to the court why my hair was so curly. I showed her that I curled it with paper. She teased me ever afterwards. She also said that I could not pull my hair straight in time to wear Manchu clothes, that everyone would laugh at me, and how ugly I would look. That night, 1 court lady came over to me while I was sitting on the veranda, and said, "I wonder if you will look nice in Manchu dress." I told her I only wanted to look natural. "You have lived so many years abroad, we consider you are a foreigner to us." I told her that as long as Her Majesty considered I was one of her own, I would be satisfied, and that she need not worry herself about me. I knew they were jealous of us, so I went in search of the young Empress, and left this girl alone. We were talking with the young Empress in the waiting room, and this girl came in and sat near me, smiling to herself most of the time. One of the servant girls was fixing some fresh flowers for Her Majesty, She looked at her and asked her why she was smiling. The young empress saw and asked her the same question. She would not answer, but kept on smiling all the time. At this moment, a eunuch came and said that Her Majesty wanted me. I afterwards tried to find out what she had told the young empress, but could not. Several days passed very quickly. Her Majesty was happy, and so was I. One day, the young empress reminded us that we should make all preparations in order to be able to dress ourselves properly on the 18th, as the time was getting short, only 2 days left. That night, after Her Majesty had retired, I went to my own room and fixed my headdress on and went to see the young empress. She said that I looked very nice and that she was sure Her Majesty would like me better in Manchu costume. I told her that I used to wear Manchu dress when I was a little girl, before we went to Europe, and of course I knew how to put it on. I also told her that I could not understand why these girls looked upon me as a foreigner. She said that they only showed their ignorance, and that they were jealous of me, and that I should not pay any attention to them at all. End of chapter 9. Read by J.C. Guan, January 2009. Chapter 11 of 2 Years in the Forbidden City. This LibriVox recording is in the public domain. Recording by J.C. Guan. 2 Years in the Forbidden City by Princess De Ling. Chapter 11. Our Costumes. The next day, we got up earlier than usual and dressed ourselves in our new gowns. I could not believe my own eyes and asked several times whether that was myself or not. I found that I looked all right, although I hadn't been wearing this sort of costume for so long. They seemed to think that we would look awkward. Our own eunuchs were delighted to see us dressed that way. The young empress came in while passing our rooms on her way to the empress dowager's place, and waited for us to go with her. When we arrived at the waiting room, a lot of people came in and looked at us, and talked so much about us that it made me feel rather shy. Everyone told us that we looked much better that way than in foreign clothes, except the Emperor Guangxu. He said to me, "I think your Parisian gowns are far prettier than this." I smiled and said nothing. He shook his head at me and went into Her Majesty's bedroom. Li Lianying came and saw us and was very much excited and told me to go and see Her Majesty at once. I told him that everyone was looking at us, as if we were curios. He said, "You don't know how nice you look now, and I wish that you would not wear foreign clothes at all." Her Majesty laughed so loud when she saw us that it made me uncomfortable, for I was afraid we looked unnatural to her. She said, "I cannot believe you are the same girls. Just look at yourselves in this looking-glass." She pointed to a large mirror in her room. "See how you have changed. I feel that you belong to me now. I must have some more gowns made for you." Then Li Lianying said that the 24th would be the first day of the summer. On that day, everyone would begin to wear jade hairpins instead of gold, and we had none. Her Majesty said to Li, "I am very glad you told me that. I must give them each a jade hairpin, after having asked them to change into Manchu clothes." Li went away and came back with a box of hairpins of pure green jade. Her Majesty took a beautiful one and handed it to my mother and told her that that pin had been worn by 3 empresses. She took 2 very nice ones and gave 1 to me and 1 to my sister. She told us that these 2 were a pair and that the other empress dowager, the East Empress Dowager, used to wear one, and that the other was worn by herself when she was young. I felt ashamed that Her Majesty had given us so many presents, and I had done nothing for her in any way. However, we thanked her most sincerely, and showed our appreciation. She said, "I look upon you as my own people, and the gowns I have made for you are the very best, I have also decided to let you wear the full court dress, the same as one of the princesses. You are my court lady, so you are equally ranked here." Li stood there behind her, and made a sign to us to kowtow to her. I cannot remember how many times I kowtowed that day. The headdress was very heavy, and I was not quite used to it. I was afraid it might fall off. Her Majesty also said that she would make our rank known to the court on her 70th birthday. I will explain this. On every decade from the time of her birth, Her Majesty used to give special favors to anyone she liked, or to anyone who had done something for her, and had been useful to her. She could promote anyone at any time, but on these occasions it was something special. The young Empress congratulated us, and said that Her Majesty was looking for a young prince to marry me. She was also very fond of teasing. I wrote to my father about all the favors that had been given to me. He wrote me he hoped that I deserved them all, and that I must do all I could to be useful and loyal to Her Majesty as long as she lived. I was very happy. Life was perfectly lovely at the palace. Her Majesty was always nice and kind. I noted the difference in the way she had treated us since, as she said, we had become Manchu once more. One day, Her Majesty asked me, while we were sailing on the lake in the moonlight, if I wanted to go to Europe any more. It was a superb night, and several boats were sailing behind us. In one boat, several eunuchs were playing a kind of sweet music on the flute and an instrument very much like the mandolin, called Yue Qin, small harp, like the shape of the moon, with Her Majesty singing very softly to herself. I told her I was satisfied to be with her, and did not wish to go anywhere at all. She said that I must learn to sing poetry, and that she would teach me every day. I told her that my father had made me study all kinds of poetry, and I had composed some myself. She looked surprised, and said, "Why didn't you tell me that before? I love poems. You must read to me sometimes. I have many books here, containing poems of different dynasties." I told her that my knowledge of Chinese literature was very limited, and I dared not let her see how little I knew. I had only studied 8 years. Her Majesty told me that the young Empress and herself were the only ones who were familiar with Chinese literature at the court. She told me that she tried to teach the court ladies to read and write some time ago, but having found them so lazy, she gave them up. My father told me to be very careful not to show them what I could do until I was asked, so I kept it to myself. After they found this out, some of the court ladies were very disagreeable to me, and this went on day after day. Except for this unpleasantness, the fourth moon passed very agreeably. The first day of the fifth moon was a busy day for us all, as from the first to the fifth of the fifth moon was the festival of 5 poisonous insects, which I will explain later, also called the Dragon Boat Festival. All the viceroys, governors, and high officials, beside the imperial family, court ladies and eunuchs, all offer Her Majesty beautiful presents. I never saw such a lot of things as came into the palace during this festival. Each person who sent in presents must accompany them with a sheet of yellow paper, and at the right lower corner the sender's name must be written, and also the word Gui Jin, meaning to present their gifts kneeling, also to write what the presents were. The eunuchs took big yellow trays to bring them in. During these 5 days everyone was busy, especially the eunuchs. I could not count just how many people sent presents to Her Majesty. The presents were of every kind, such as things for the household, silks and jewelry of all kinds and description. A large part of the presents were foreign goods of the ordinary kind. I also saw lovely carved thrones and embroideries. Her Majesty ordered them to be put away, and the foreign things to be kept in her palace, for those were new to her. The third day of the fifth moon was the day for just the people of the palace to make presents. It was a most beautiful sight to see. We were busy all night making preparations, and had to go and help the young empress. The next morning, we placed our presents in the big courtyard in these big yellow trays. The young empress had her trays in the first row. The presents from the young empress to the empress dowager were made by her own hands. There were 10 pairs of shoes, silk embroidered handkerchiefs, little bags for betel nuts, and bags for tobacco, all exquisitely done. The secondary wife of the Emperor Guangxu presented about the same to Her Majesty. The court ladies' presents were all different, as we could ask permission to go out shopping before the feast. We could not go out together, for one or two of us must be there at all times, and it was very exciting to tell each other what we had bought. We ourselves did not ask permission to go out of the palace, for we had our presents ready long before. Everyone seemed to be talking about presents, whether Her Majesty would like them or not. My mother, my sister, and myself had written to Paris to get some lovely French brocades, one set of furniture, French Empire style. We had learned Her Majesty's taste already during our short stay there, so, including those presents, we also gave her fans, perfumes, soaps, and some other French novelties. Her Majesty always looked over everything, and noticed some of the presents were of very poor quality, and wanted to know the sender's name. The eunuchs and servant girls also made her good and useful presents. Her Majesty would select the articles she liked the best, and order the rest to be put away, and she might never see them again. I must say that Her Majesty liked and admired some foreign things very much. She especially loved the French fancy brocades, for she was making new gowns almost every day. She was also pleased with soaps and powder that would beautify the skin. She always thanked us in a very nice way, and said how very thoughtful we were in selecting beautiful articles for her. Her Majesty would also say something nice to the eunuchs and girls, and that made everyone feel pleased. The fourth day of the fifth moon was the day that Her Majesty gave presents to us all, the different princes, high officials, servant girls, and eunuchs. Her memory was something extraordinary, for she could remember every one of the presents that had been given to her the day before, and the names of the givers also. That was a busy day for us. Her Majesty gave people presents according to the way they gave her. We had yellow sheets of paper, and wrote out the names of those to whom she wished to give. That day, Her Majesty was very angry with one of the wives of a certain prince, because her presents were the poorest. Her Majesty told me to keep that tray in her room, and said she would go over them and see what they were. I knew she was not pleased, for she had a tell-tale face. She told us to measure the silks and ribbons in that tray, and leave it in the hall. The ribbons were all of different lengths, all too short to trim a gown, and the dress materials were not of good quality. Her Majesty said to me, "Now you look for yourself. Are these good presents? I know very well all these things were given to them by other people, and they, of course, would select the best for themselves and give me what was left. They know they are obliged to send me something. I am surprised to see how careless they are. Probably, they thought, as I receive so many presents, I would not notice. They are mistaken, for I notice the poorest the first. In fact, I can remember everything. I can see those who gave me things in order to please me, and those who gave because they were obliged to. I will return them the same way." She gave the court ladies each a beautiful embroidered gown, and a few hundred taels, the same to the young empress, and the secondary wife. The presents which she gave us were a little different, consisting of two embroidered gowns, several simple ones, jackets and sleeveless jackets, shoes, and flowers for the Manchu headdress. She said that we had not so many gowns, and instead of giving us the money, she had things made for us. Besides that, she gave me a pair of very pretty earrings, but none to my sister, for she noticed that I had a pair of ordinary gold earrings, while my sister had a pair set with pearls and jade. Her Majesty said to my mother, "Yu Taitai, I can see you love one daughter better than the other. Rongling has such pretty earrings, and poor De Ling has none. Before my mother could answer her, she had turned to me while I was standing at the back of her chair. "I will have a nice pair made for you. You are mine now." My mother told her that I did not like to wear heavy earrings. Her Majesty laughed and said, "Never mind, she is mine now, and I will give her everything she needs. You have nothing to do with her." The earrings she gave me were very heavy. Her Majesty said that if I would wear them every day, I would get used to them, and so it proved that after some time I thought nothing of it. Now about this feast. It is also called the Dragon Boat Feast. The fifth of the fifth moon, at noon, was the most poisonous hour for the poisonous insects, and reptiles, such as frogs, lizards, snakes, hide themselves in the mud. For that hour, they are paralyzed. Some medical men search for them at that hour and place them in jars, and when they are dried, sometime use them as medicine. Her Majesty told me this, so that day I went all over everywhere and dug into the ground, but found nothing. The usual custom was that at noon Her Majesty took a small cup filled with spirits of wine and added a kind of yellow powder, something like sulphur. She took a small brush and dipped it into the cup and made a few spots of this yellow paint under our nostrils and ears. This was to prevent any insects from crawling on us during the coming summer. The reason why it was also called the Dragon Boat Festival was because at the time of the Zhou Dynasty, the country was divided into several parts. Each place had a ruler. The Emperor Zhou had a prime minister named Qu Yuan, who advised him to make alliance with the other six countries. But the emperor refused, and Qu Yuan thought that the country would be taken by others in the near future. He could not influence the emperor, so he made up his mind to commit suicide and jumped into the river, taking a large piece of stone with him. This happened on the fifth day of the fifth moon, so the year afterwards the emperor got into a dragon boat to worship his soul and threw rice cakes, called zhongzi, into the river. On that day the people have celebrated this feast ever since. At the palace, the theater played first this history, which was very interesting, and also played the insects trying to hide themselves before the most poisonous hour arrived. On that day we all wore tiger shoes, the front part of which was made of a tiger's head, with little tigers made of yellowed silk to wear on the headdress. These tigers were only for the children to wear, and signified that they would be as strong as a tiger. But Her Majesty wanted us to wear them also. The wives of the Manchu officials came to the court, and when they saw us, they laughed at us. We told them it was by Her Majesty's orders. A register recording the birthdays of all the court ladies was kept by the head eunuch, and a few days before my own birthday came around, the tenth day of the fifth moon, he informed me that the custom of the court was to make a present to Her Majesty, and said that the present should take the form of fruit, cakes, etc., so I ordered 8 boxes of different kinds. Early in the morning, I put on full court dress, and made myself look as nice as possible, and went to wish Her Majesty good morning. When she had finished dressing, the eunuchs brought in the presents, and kneeling, I presented them to Her Majesty, bowing to the ground 9 times. She thanked me, and wished me a happy birthday. She then made me a present of a pair of sandalwood bracelets, beautifully carved, also a few rolls of brocade silk. She also informed me that she had ordered some macaroni in honor of my birthday. This macaroni is called Changshou Mian, the long-life macaroni. This was the custom. I again bowed and thanked her for her kindness and thoughtfulness. After bowing to the young empress and receiving in return 2 pairs of shoes and several embroidered neckties, I returned to my room, where I found presents from all the court ladies. Altogether, I had a very happy birthday. I can never forget the 15th day of the fifth moon as long as I live, for that was a bad day for everyone. As usual, we went to Her Majesty's bedroom quite early that morning. She could not get up and complained that her back ached so much. We rubbed her back in turns, and finally she got up, though a little late. She was not satisfied. The emperor came in and knelt down to wish her good morning, but she scarcely took any notice of him. I noticed that when the emperor saw that Her Majesty was not well, he said very little to her. The eunuch who dressed her hair every morning was ill, and had ordered another one to help her. Her Majesty told us to watch him very closely, to see that he did not pull her hair off. She could not bear to see even one or two hairs fall out. This eunuch was not used to trickery. For instance, in case the hair was falling off, he could not hide it like the other one did. This poor man did not know what to do with any that came out. He was frightened, and Her Majesty, seeing him through the mirror, asked him whether he had pulled her hair out. He said that he had. This made her furious, and she told him to replace it. I almost laughed, but the eunuch was very much frightened and started to cry. Her Majesty ordered him to leave the room, and said she would punish him later. We helped her to fix up her hair. I must say it was not an easy job, for she had very long hair, and it was difficult to comb. She went to the morning audience as usual, and after that she told the head eunuch what had happened. This Li was indeed a bad and cruel man, and said, "Why not beat him to death?" Immediately she ordered Li to take this man to his own quarters to receive punishment. Then Her Majesty said the food was bad, and ordered the cooks to be punished also. They told me that whenever Her Majesty was angry, everything went wrong, so I was not surprised that so many things happened that day. Her Majesty said that we all looked too vain with our hair too low down at the back of the head. This Manchu headdress is placed right in the center of one's head, and the back part is called the swallow's tail, and must reach the bottom of one's collar. We had our hair done up the same way every day, and she had previously never said a word about it. She looked at us and said, "Now I am going to the audience, and don't need you all here. Go back to your rooms and fix your hair all over again. If I ever see you all like that again, I am going to cut your hair off." I was never more surprised in my life when I heard her speak so sharply to us. I don't know whether I was spoken to or not, but I thought it well to be wise, and I answered I would. We were all ready to go, and Her Majesty stood there watching us. When we were about 5 or 6 feet away, we heard her scolding Chun Shou, the girl who was neither a court lady nor a servant. Her Majesty said she was pretending she was all right, and Her Majesty ordered her to go also. When we were all walking towards our own place, some of them laughed at Chun Shou, which made her angry. When Her Majesty was angry with anyone, she would say that we were all doing something on purpose to make her angry. I must say that every one of us was scared, and wondered who would have dared to do that. On the contrary, we tried our best to please her in every way. But that day she was furious all day, and I tried to stay away from her. I noticed some of the eunuchs went to her to ask questions concerning important matters, but she would not look at them, but kept on reading her book. To tell the truth, I felt miserable that day. At the beginning, I thought all the eunuchs were faithful servants, but seeing them every day, I got to know them. It did not do them any harm to be punished once in a while. The young empress told me to go in and wait on Her Majesty as usual. She said that probably, if I would suggest playing dice with her, she might forget her troubles. At first I did not want to go, for I was afraid that she might say something to me. But seeing that the poor young empress spoke to me so nicely, I told her I would try. When I entered Her Majesty's sitting-room, I found her reading a book. She looked at me and said, "Come over here. I would like to tell you something. You know, these people at the palace are no good, and I don't like them at all. I don't want them to poison your ears by telling you how wicked I am. Don't talk to them. You must not fix your hair too low down at the back of your head. I was not angry with you this morning. I know you are different. Don't let them influence you. I want you to be on my side, and do as I tell you." Her Majesty spoke very kindly to me, and her face changed also. Not at all the same face she had that morning. Of course, I promised her that I would be only too happy to do all I could to please her. She spoke to me just like a good mother would speak to a dear child. I changed my opinion and thought that perhaps, after all, she was right. But I had often heard from the officials that one cannot be good to a eunuch, as he would do all he could to injure you without any reason whatsoever. I noticed that day they all seemed to be more careful in doing their work. I was told that when once Her Majesty got angry, she would never finish. On the contrary, she talked to me very nicely, just as if there had been no troubles at all. She was not difficult to wait upon, only one had to watch her moods. I thought how fascinating she was, and I had already forgotten that she had been angry. She seemed to have guessed what I was thinking, and said, "I can make people hate me worse than poison, and can also make them love me. I have that power." I thought she was right there. End of chapter 11. Read by J.C. Guan, Montreal, January 2009.
When you think about businesses that are selling through the roof, like Allo or Allbirds or Skims, sure, you think about a great product, a cool brand, and brilliant marketing. But an often overlooked secret is actually the businesses behind the business, making selling simple. For millions of businesses, that business is Shopify. Nobody does selling better than Shopify, home of the number one checkout on the planet. And the not-so-secret secret? With Shop Pay, that boosts conversions up to 50%, meaning way less carts going abandoned and way more sales going. So if you're into growing your business, your commerce platform better be ready to sell whatever your customers are scrolling or strolling on the web, in your store, in their feed, and everywhere in between. Upgrade your business and get the same checkout Skims uses. Sign up for your $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/try, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/try to upgrade your selling today. Shopify.com/try.
Save big money on your next project. Now at Menards. Brighten up your garage or workspaces with LED utility and panel light bulbs from GT Light. GT Light light bulbs are energy efficient, and with their easy adjustable light panels, you can direct light where you need it most. Save big on all GT industrial utility and panel light bulbs. And don't forget to check out our weekly flyer for more hot deals happening now.
Save big.